Congratulations! You have found the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, also known as the Lamb. The Lamb is the largest collective of online movie blogs and podcasts with 2,000 members and counting. Every week on the Lambcast, various members of the Lamb community get together to talk about our favorite subject, movies. So bookmark the Lamb and follow us on social media. Be sure to join us each week to hear a lively discussion of films and movie-related talk from our members. Join the flock at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas, you filthy animals. It's December, and on the Lambcast, that means Movie of the Month is Christmas-related. Welcome to episode 714 of the Lambcast. I'm your host, at least for the next couple of minutes, Richard Kirkham from Kirkham A Movie A Day. Past December Movie of the Month episodes have included Christmas and Christmas-adjacent films like Die Hard 2, Die Harder, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and Batman Returns. Of course, we've also featured films that are clearly Christmas movies as well, like Die Hard and It's a Wonderful Life. This year, we have a film that's not clearly adjacent or traditional. We'll have to let our panel of movie mavens decide for us as we take a look at the zombie apocalypse and High School Musicals, all in one big gulp. Our film today is Anna and the Apocalypse. The Lambcast members will end up either zombies or survivors. Let's see who has those critical fates in front of them. Ready to break away and find a Hollywood ending, she's well prepared to talk about zombie movies after reviewing Hallmark films for her own sites. Welcome, Rachel Wagner.
Merry Christmas!
Next, he's a veteran of podcasts featuring this film, having recently covered it on Cinema Recall podcast, our own soldier at war, The Vern.
Hello, Merry Christmas, y'all, you zombie lovers out there.
And finally, the champion of the film, Christmas means nothing without Howard Kasner.
Well, Christmas is fast becoming my least favorite C word.
Well, as champion of the film, Howard gets to host the discussion. So, Howard, give them a show.
Well, thank you. First, I want to thank Vern. Because in many ways, I think this was his victory more than mine. Since I got sick, I wasn't able to push it much. But Vern was just all over the place saying, vote for this, vote for this, vote for this.
Yes, so I pushed hard for this, buddy, and I'm so glad you won. I'm very excited about this. Trust me, I would say that I'm just feeling a little tired right now, but I'm very, very excited about this.
Great. Well, murder, mayhem, bullies, bad cafeteria food, fascistic teachers, terrible Christmas shows, the living dead going around biting people. So basically typical high school. Yes, welcome to Anna and the Apocalypse, or as I like to call it, Glee meets Shaun of the Dead. And Anna and the Apocalypse is a teenage angst Christmas musical zombie film released in 2017. It was directed by John McPhail from a screenplay by Alan MacDonald and Ryan McHenry, based on McHenry's 2010 BAFTA-nominated short zombie musical. It stars a bunch of people who I swear I know, but can't quite place. And this includes Ellen Hunt, Malcolm Cummings, Sarah Swire, Christopher Laveau, Ben Wiggins, Marley Sue, Paul Kay, and the only one I could place, Mark Benson, is Tony and his father, who I've seen on the mystery series Shakespeare and Hathaway. I kept saying, I know that guy. So to begin, let's do what we usually do and go around and give our general feelings about the movie and our initial reactions to seeing it. And for those who have seen it more than once, you might also include what it was like seeing it a second time. And this should be spoiler-free, pretty much. So start with Rachel.
Yeah, so I was actually pretty hyped for this movie because my friend Sean Chandler had seen it at Fantastic Fest the fall before, and had really hyped it up for me and knew that I would really love it because he knows how much I love Christmas movies and how much I love musicals. And so I had been looking forward to it all year, And so, you know, that's always a little bit of a dangerous situation to go into with high expectations. But for me, at least, it totally met that those expectations. I'm not like the biggest horror person, but I really loved the music, and I thought some of the turns were surprising. I did not expect certain people to turn that did. In this kind of story, and I you know, of course, love the Christmas element, and it was just something new. And as somebody who watches so many, you know, these rom-com Christmas movies, it was just fun to see something different, and it's one that I was happy to put on again this year and watch again, and yeah, I just think it's very creative and fun, and I'm surprised it hasn't gotten more of a cult following, because it just seems like the kind of thing that would really attract that kind of a fandom.
I was also surprised when it first came out, it didn't get more of a following in the U.S. It's, you're right, yeah. It just seems to cry for that sort of thing. So, Richard.
Yes. Let me tell you, I heard about this movie, and I tried to see it when it first came into theaters. It had a very, very limited theatrical release. I think it was playing at one time a day for 1 week in December of 2018. And I managed to find an opportunity to go and see it. I think we saw it right after Christmas instead of right before Christmas. And I, you know, from the very beginning, I was perfectly willing to say we have a new entry in the best Christmas film of all time. And as far as I was concerned, I would have been perfectly happy if all of the songs had been nominated for Best Song for the Academy Award. This was just exactly in my wheelhouse, one of those things that I enjoy so much. I love these kinds of musicals that kind of subvert the genre of musicals, take a different take on it. You know, The Phantom of the Paradise is one of my favorite Brian De Palma films.
Yes.
Rocky Horror Picture Show is just hysterical and clever all the way, and Anna and the Apocalypse fits right up there on the shelf with those kinds of movies. It's got all kinds of charm. I think the young stars are, you know, very entertaining and engaging, and I especially like the lead. I thought that the songs, like I said, were very creative, and the zombie stuff was a blast. It does get a little tiresome after a while. You know, let's face it, we've always had this conflict between the fast zombies and the slow zombies, and the slow zombies at least leave time for singing and dancing, so I'm okay with that.
It's funny too, Howard, because you mentioned about how you and Richard both mentioned how you wish this was more of a cult film. And when I hear you talk about Rocky Horror Picture Show, I imagine if theaters start doing like midnight showings of this, it'll have the ability to become a cult classic. Because it took like several years before Rocky Horror was a cult classic, didn't it? It took like several years.
It only took a couple of years for it to start that way. What I don't understand is why TNT is not running it for 24 hours a day, you know, the day before Christmas.
Good point.
You know,
yes.
We could have The Christmas Story on one channel and Anna and the Apocalypse on another, and we could switch back and forth between them. That's the Christmas holiday programming I'd be up for.
I totally agree with that.
The true meaning of Christmas, Richard.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, Vern.
Oh, so yeah, thanks, Howard. Well, I remember seeing trailers of this and just getting really excited, but also a little hesitant because they mentioned it's like a Christmas zombie musical. And I'm thinking, okay, all right, it's something to be just completely cheesy and lame, good for a laugh. I'm expecting a very much like a Shaun of the Dead type of zombie movie. And going into it, I had no idea what the songs were going to be. And you actually, it's a while before you actually see any zombie action. And the first two songs, I think one's called Breakaway, and then Hollywood Ended. When that Hollywood Ending song came up, I was like, okay, that's it. Damn it, movie, you made me a fan of this. I didn't think that I was going to be, because usually when I hear the combinations of a Glee, I'm like, all right, I don't know about this. I'd be hesitant. But the songs were just bangers. Every single one of them were just absolutely great. And I love the fact, too, that this movie is a serious zombie movie as well. I mean, there are stakes that these characters go through, and you're not quite sure who's going to survive or not. And it treats the lore of zombies very respectfully. This could very much be in the same platform as George Romero's zombie movies, just got putting some songs and dancing in there, and it fits. It's something that shouldn't fit, but it just does. It just works out great. And all the cast members are amazing. They sell the performance fully. You believe them fully as characters there. I will say my favorite song, I know I mentioned this in our Cinema Recall episode, but my favorite song is that Christmas song that Sarah Lee sings, or yeah, is her name. I'm blanking on her name right now. Marley Sue.
It's that time of year is the song.
Yes, it's that time of year, yes. Better than I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus.
Well, her chimney needs unblocking, and of course that suggests all kinds of things about the Christmas season.
I hunt up your something in your stockings, and my chimney is going unblocking. Yes. Oh.
Well, okay. I first saw it when it came out. I'm not sure why I saw it, because I've been over zombie movies for a long time. I've said on this show, I was in the theater for the opening night of Dawn of the Dead in Chicago, and the appeal of zombies to a great degree has worn off me as you start thinking about things surrounding it and how it doesn't really make any sense in some areas. So I don't know exactly why I wanted to see this, but I just got a feeling that this was going to be worth seeing. And as I'm watching it, they have that first song, and that does it. I'm in. You don't expect that level of music you certainly don't expect it in a horror movie or a zombie movie, and it's better than the vast majority of musical numbers and soundtracks that I've heard lately. So it was just an incredible surprise, and I was just with it all through. One interesting thing this time around is they start off singing about breaking away and all their big hopes, and I'm going, no, most of you are going to die. You don't have any hopes. You know, that's all over. And it was both kind of sad, once you know sort of what's going to happen. And so, yes, like you, I just loved it. I was there with it all the way. The film combines a lot of genres. There's the high school teen angst film, the Christmas film, the musical film, and The Living Dead. And all this is very postmodern to combine this many genres, as well as in many ways calling attention to itself. How successful do you think the director was at combining all these genres? I don't know if anybody in particular wants to start with this.
Well, I think the director does a really good job at establishing the characters first. You have Anna, who wants to go away and travel the world, and her dad is like, you know, maybe she should just go and finish school and be responsible. And you got her best friend who's pining after her, and she loves them, but not in that particular way. And then we have, there's the couple with Marley Sue, and I forget the other guy's name.
Chris.
Her boyfriend. Okay. You got them going through their issues. And I just love the fact that you get to know about, especially that first song, Howard, you get to know about all their hopes and dreams and everything. And I think Hollywood Ending is a great song that shows also their hopes and dreams and what they want to have. And I love the fact with Anna had a one-night stand with a guy, and it didn't work out as well as she wanted to, but she shouldn't feel ashamed about having sets and whatnot. I found that to be very kind of powerful and everything too. So, but I like the fact that they built up all these characters, before the zombie stuff actually happens. You hear a little glimpse of zombie stuff going on the radio, but it doesn't start off in a typical horror fashion by having the horror element first. This director wants you to know these characters, first of all, and their dreams and hopes and aspirations, and then slowly move the zombie element into it, and I thought it just worked out great. To the point when Anna's walking outside of her house with her headphones on, and all these zombie attacks are happening, you buy into the environment. Like, the director really has a great way of building a world around this movie.
I think that's all very true, especially like what I call the Shaun of the Dead scene, which is when she leaves the house and she doesn't notice anything that's going around her. What about you, Rachel? How do you think all these various elements fit together, and did the director do a good job here?
Yeah, I think that they did a very good job of putting everything together, and I do think that the opening sort of montage is probably the strongest of the Hollywood ending. I'm not somebody who's very well versed in horror, and you know, so I know some people were a little like, oh, I've seen certain elements of this many times, but for me at least, like, it felt very fresh, and I thought that that Ella Hunt was really good as Anna. She has sort of a sarcasm and a dryness to her that I thought was appealing, and I was surprised kind of where things went with John. I thought that was interesting. And I mean, the two that are the couple, they are pretty stupid, but they're high school students, so it's fine.
They're adorbs.
I mean, going back for their phone is pretty dumb, but whatever.
A lot of the characters of this movie made a lot of dumb choices. I know her best friend wants to protect her, but come on, guy. You gotta watch where you're walking, right? You literally just walked into a zombie to have him bite you, right? So I feel bad for you, but you kind of got what you deserved because you were not paying attention. You could have easily avoided that stuff.
Well, I was surprised because I did not think that he was going to turn. And that surprised me that they went there.
Well, we are getting a little into spoiler territory.
Yeah, I was just going to say. So
let's pull back a little bit. What about you, Richard?
Well, you know, I think that given that you have so many genres being presented here, that the director does just the right amount on each of them. It would be easy to fall into the trap of getting caught up in the drama between Anna and her father and the dispute about whether or not she's going to go to university or travel for a year, or, you know, all the angst of John pining after Anna and not being seen as a true love interest, or the bully in the background, that could have been a bigger deal. And of course, we have the girl Steph, who is, you know, her family has basically abandoned her at the holiday time. Her girlfriend is not available to her. She's got resentment all over the place. She's, you know, obviously a justice warrior who's trying to turn the school around. And we could have gotten all wrapped up in that whole story about how Mr. Savage is suppressing the enthusiasm that she has for her project there. But that's not really what the movie's about. We just need a little bit of those kinds of things to give us some sense of what the characters are like. As we're going to go forward, it's important to know that Steph is very assertive and forceful, and that John has been reticent to express himself to Anna about particular things, or that Nick is super overconfident and, you know, feels like he's a macho sex god kind of thing. We got just enough of that in the background to set up all the stuff that happens during the apocalypse. Otherwise, you'd be worried about some story thread that isn't really part of what's going on here. So I thought it was balanced very well.
Probably my least favorite is probably the teacher. And he was the principal, the person, what's his name?
Future headmaster, Mr. Savage.
Mr. Savage, yeah. He was kind of annoying. I mean, he's supposed to be annoying, but he was a little much.
I agree, Rachel. His voice was, and it's supposed to be this, most like, it has like this Snidely Whiplash type of tone to his voice, and it just sounded very off, like too much evil sounded. He was trying to do like Dr. Evil type of thing, but like, hi, I'm the evil guy here.
Yeah, he's not quite as rounded out as the others.
He does a good Vincent Price impression, though.
There you go. That's zero. Yes.
Well, I think I agree with you all. One of the difficult things about writing a movie with different genres is how to not just balance them out, but how to let the audience know that there are multiple genres here and which one comes first. Usually I tell people the most extreme version, the most extreme genre comes first, and that's usually the horror thing. But, you know, this isn't cut in stone or anything. But, you know, when it came to Aliens versus Cowboys, you know, I think maybe they should have introduced the aliens first or something. Here he does something very interesting. The writer does something very interesting by, you know, already it's a zombie movie going in, and you have the title Anna the Apocalypse, and you have the message on the radio saying there's this virus that has broken out, and that's pretty much all you need to establish that this is going to be a horror musical. So it sort of introduced all three elements at exactly the same moment in the opening scenes, the teenage angst, the musical, and the horror film. So I thought that was very, very clever. And then it's very hard, at least in a lot of the musicals, new musicals I've seen lately, to introduce a song without it seeming forced. That's one of the most difficult things about writing musicals at all, where suddenly people start singing and you have to have the right build up and intro to it. I thought they did a great job here. Whenever they started singing, it didn't seem forced, and it did seem to build upon taking the emotions to a higher level.
Let me interject here. I agree with you for the most part, but there were a few times when it really seemed to me that it was very much like an episode of Glee, where everything stops, we get the spotlight on the face of the person who's about to sing and start their big number, and you know, they kind of look off into the distance, and it's a framing shot that gets used quite often, and that is the one thing that bugged me a little bit. I most of the time, like the, you know, Anna coming out of the house was great, and dancing down the street, I thought that was fantastic. But when Steph steps up to do her song, we get one of those, you know, moments. It's like, everybody be silent because we're about to get a solo here.
I can see that. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. But what did you all think of the songs?
Oh,
I think we talked some about it already.
Yes.
But
I know that there's like a festival cut of this movie out somewhere. I don't know if they're gonna release it on physical media or if it's just a thing only for theaters, but they have like longer versions of songs. The song that really got me into this movie was Hollywood Ending. I love the first track because I was amazed about how actually good it was gonna be. But yeah, Hollywood Ending is my favorite. Next to It's That Time of Year. I don't know exactly the name of the song that she sings when she leaves the home. But
that's turning my life around.
Okay. Yeah. I seriously want to try to find this album, the soundtrack on vinyl, and listen to it all. This would go right with my Charlie Brown Christmas soundtrack record to play for every single holiday season. I don't know about you, Rachel. Did you have a favorite song?
It's probably those two, Hollywood Ending and Turning My Life Around, are the standouts. Probably Turning My Life Around is probably my favorite, but there's a really strong, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Fish song, but other than that.
Oh, come on, Mother Flipper. that was cheesy and lame and bad, but in the right amount, and it was kind of short. I'm fine with that.
The Soldier at War, that one's not my favorite. So, like, they're not all bangers, but it's. I was, as a musical theater fan, I was totally a fan of the music.
And clearly, there is diversity in the world of people who appreciate musical theater, because I thought Soldier at War was a really good song for that section of the film. I think Hollywood Ending is great. Breakaway is such a standard kind of opening song. It feels like I've seen it in every Disney movie in 10 years, you know, something like that, where that's everybody's fair. Singing about their hopes and aspirations, but they do a great job of it. The Fish Rap song is completely superfluous, completely stupid, and funny.
I
could see if you cut that out. And Vern, if you're interested, I have that album sitting in the other room right now, you know, the one that you're talking beautiful. About.
That's beautiful.
And I did read that there is a Blu-ray that includes all three cuts of the film. So there's the festival cut, the U.S. cut, and then there's the longer cut that includes an additional song. So if you dig around someplace in the interwebs, I'm sure that you can buy it. You know, somebody will be happy to provide you the physical media that allows you to keep this forever and ever.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned too, like my co-host Ashley of Cinema Recall, she mentioned like the last song that she sings when she's at the place where they had the talent show. The very last song that she sings was a very powerful, uplifting song. I forgot the name of it, but the last song that Anna sings, I think it's I Will Believe.
I think that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
She sings with her dad, I think.
Yeah.
I think the it's an outstanding score. As I said, I like it better than many recent stage musicals, Broadway musicals that I've heard, which are tending to sound alike. I mean, these are rock songs, but they're very tongue-in-cheek, and they have a tone that's different from what's going on around them that works very well. I also like the Don't Be a Soldier song. And I'm going to start getting, so all the listeners, we're going to start getting into spoilers. But one of the reasons is I didn't really expect that Nick, played by Ben Wiggins, was going to survive. I thought it was going to go with the cliche that he was going to be shown that his macho-ness was the bad way to go, and that Malcolm Cunning's John's sensitiveness was much better. But they said, no, it's the alpha male. You may hate the alpha male, but he's the only one that's going to get you out of this mess. And Anna's the same way. She's the alpha female. They're the only ones that are going to get you out of your mess. Doesn't matter if you like them or not. They're your only hope. And so basically, they got rid of everybody except the two alpha females and the alpha male at the end, which I didn't expect but thought was the right way to go.
Yeah. And one thing too, Howard, I wanted to mention about this as well, because I am a big horror fan. And I thought all the practical zombie effects were great. I thought the gore was epic. The scene where the dude smashes the zombie's head with bowling ball was great.
And the head comes out of
the snowman? The bowling alley. Yes. I know what you're talking about.
The head comes out of the return. That was brilliant. I mean, like, there were a lot of little things.
And I just love that this
really nice.
This writer and director has such a love of musicals, because they made the songs very good, but also they love horror movies and they love practical effects. There may be a few CG things in there, but this is mostly a practical effects movie, and that costs a lot of money. So you imagine they spent a lot of money mixing and mastering these songs to make them sound really good, but then also you have a whole practical effects team doing all the great zombie makeup and practical effects there, and turning a great story. Yeah, I just had to mention that quickly, Howard. I apologize if I cite various little things.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I mean, I agree with what everybody's saying. I also like how they do things like they take Christmas icons and they just destroy them. You know, you have the snowman, the guy in the snowman costume. They burn up a Christmas tree, you know. They're just taking everything this Christmas.
Candy canes is
just
a weapon.
Yes, that's the most iconic image is Anna holding that candy cane as it's her weapon. It is great. I hope to see more Halloween costumes of that. It's just epic. This candy cane stay with blood, blood in her face. Yes. Merry Christmas, mother flippers.
Yes. There's also a lot of other little things, too. I like how Savage, when he falls off the stage, he is body surfing against all the zombies, on top of all the zombies.
I even love the way it sets up things towards the end, because there's a part in the beginning where a star falls.
And, like and misses him.
Council.
And of course,
so it sets it up with the star.
At the end, it doesn't miss him.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of great setup and payoffs in this. And yeah, a lot of fun.
There's foreshadowing all over the place.
Other favorite parts? Anybody? Rachel, do you have some especially favorite parts?
Well, I do like that last scene between her and her dad. And you know she sees he's been bit, and I think that's a lovely moment.
I cried. Mm-hmm. I did, literally cried.
Yeah.
Just trying to admit that I cried at this movie here because the sequence. Well, are we getting into spoilers now? Are we in the? Okay, so the sequence with our couple, one of them played by Marley Sue. When they turn into zombies and they're both just like missing each other, trying to like touch right there. I found that to be very heartwarming and sweet, but also very kind of sad because they're just trying to find that connection again that they had.
They were so attached in the first part of the film. You know, they could hardly be away from each other. They were hugging and smooching and holding hands and embracing constantly. And right at the end, as they're being, you know, as they've been attacked, the same sort of thing. And then when they're zombies, they can't even connect. It's like you get the sudden realization, you know, this destroys everything that's important about you and who you are. And, you know, besides the fact that you become a brain-eating monster, you know, your whole identity disappears. Their identities were erased, which makes it really tragic. And I thought that that's great. And, you know, the scene where Anna and her father are basically saying goodbye because she knows he's not going to know her. It's going to be a mystery. And it's just terribly sad. And I, by the way, I know Nick is the a-hole of the film, but he's also kind of a victim, and he talks about having killed his own father, and he tells Anna not to do it at the end because he knows what it'll do to her. And I thought that was a nice little touch to have in the film too.
Yeah.
I mean, were all of you surprised that John got bitten, that he turned? Because he's set up as sort of almost the protagonist at the beginning, that, you know, he's the underdog, he's the best friend, and so I was just really surprised.
I was surprised about how soon it happened.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the beta male, so he has to go. But most movies wouldn't do that. They would somehow have the beta male win. But here, no, it's the alpha male.
True.
I remember it upset my co-host. She's like, oh, I like John. I didn't want him to die so soon. What the hell? We got to deal with this a-hole living now. I think it's great. Just to say quickly, though, what I think is great is that all the actors treat this material as real. They treat it as a real thing. And I always thought the musical numbers was just their heightened emotions about a certain situation. Like, the things get heightened up even more in musical numbers, and the balance they have of that is great. But when they're, like, in the real world, between the real world and the musical world, the real world, everything's just treated very seriously. They're not playing this off as camp, which I think makes this work even better, because you could take material like this and have actors play it off as just camp, and that's what it'll just become. But the fact that they treat their characters and their situations as real, we believe in it. The numbers could be a slightly little bit campy. That's great and fun. But when they're actually doing the real stuff, it all feels real in general. And I think even a little bit more so than Shaun of the Dead, which I love Shaun of the Dead. I think that's great. But even there is play for camp just a little bit more than this.
I don't know if you agree. Yes, I'd agree with that.
I can see that.
It's very hard to make these things work if the actors aren't invested, because if they're not invested, we won't be. But also, it's part of postmodernism that not only are they invested, they have to comment on their acting and the situation as well. And I think that he does a very good job here of the movie being self-referential, as well as everybody just taking it so seriously. At the same time, not too seriously, but taking it, it's just very well done. It's very well acted. It's very well sung. It's very well choreographed. They treat it like high art, and that certainly levels it up quite a bit.
Well, you were asking about favorite sequences, and I've got to say, that whole musical sequence that they do in the auditorium, I think, is shot really effectively. First of all, the costumes are hysterical. They look really wild and interesting. Liz's dress, it's Liz, I think, the girl singing, who's played by Marley Sue, is really gorgeous. And then she's got these guys wearing nothing but Santa Claus type shorts with suspenders on, dancing around and riding or humping candy canes. And it's shot like it's a little bit, like it's an upscale, not quite upscale, but a well-made high school musical sequence. I thought that was great. But what I really liked about it was the way they had the cut-in shots, the inserts of the outgoing headmaster enjoying the hell out of the show and laughing at everything that's going on. And he's kind of applauding as it goes along. And then Tony, Anna's dad, laughing in the back. He and Savage are kind of in the sound booth where things are being controlled. And he's amused by what's going on. And Savage, of course, is exploding and frustrated. And he's going to kill her about the whole thing. And I thought it was all cut together really well. So you don't just get the musical sequence there, but you also get storytelling that goes on and tells us about characters in the movie. And Chris's grandmother sitting there, next to the empty seat, and she's giving the thumbs up even though Chris isn't there. I thought that was a really nice sequence,
I always thought that was like her music teacher, like teaching her the song. Like, yes, that's a great job. You sung the song the way it taught you how to sing it. That is epic. Yeah, I thought she was the one that taught her to sing the song.
I think it's actually her grandmother, because she's the one who has the heart. No, that's a different person. She's the one who has the heart problems later on.
Yeah, yeah. It's Chris's grandmother. Her boyfriend's grandmother. And she's there next to the empty seat where Chris is supposed to be, and she's trying to encourage Liz to keep singing, and she's doing a good job despite the fact that Chris isn't there. They're just like a lot of nice little character pieces in that sequence, as well as it being a nicely staged sequence. The dance choreography. By the way, the girl who played Steph is the choreographer for the film.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Well, nice. All right. Well, hey, way to go.
She did a great job.
Yeah, and I thought, there's no such thing as a Hollywood ending. That involves dozens and dozens of dancers in the environment, and I thought it was very cleverly staged. And then, like I said, the same thing with the stage performance of It's That Time of Year. And then, again, this is combination of choreography and directing the sequence with Soldier at War. You know, it's kind of advancing the story and the attitude of this particular character, but they have some interesting stuff that they're doing with the other, you know, aggressive macho males in the background. He's got his own little chorus to go along with his, you know, outstanding solo moment in the film. And so I just think those things have been put together very effectively.
Well, and I think there's a heart to this movie, and I think maybe part of it comes from the fact of how just personally everybody involved was in making it, because the original creator that had done the short, that he passed away before this could get before it could get finished, Ryan McHenry. And I feel like when there's that kind of like personal, when it's somebody's vision, you know, and you're executing your, you know, a friend's vision,
there's a lot more investment in what you're doing. Yeah.
And, you know, you think about like Beauty and the Beast or, you know, something like that, where, you know, they all were invested to make this for Howard Ashman. And I think that there's probably a somewhat similar of a feeling, you know, with this. And I think that's why it's more than just like a cheap, you know, zombie movie.
A cheesy
yeah.
movie. It is, I think it is very interesting how it probably shouldn't work because of all this combination and the fact that it's about teenage angst, yet there's this zombie apocalypse going on. Yet somehow we do care. We do get emotionally invested in this, what is essentially a ridiculous idea that just works so well. It is one of those movies for me that flies under the radar, but it's just so good. And it makes you frustrated that other movies that are bigger and have bigger budgets and have big ad campaigns do so much better, and you're going, but they aren't as good as this throwaway, seemingly throwaway zombie musical. This made my top 10 list of that year.
Same.
Sometimes I just get so resentful that all these other films are getting, that film like this gets overshadowed.
Howard, by doing this show, it will open up more eyes and more doors for people to see this movie. And maybe there's a theater out there. In fact, I'm going to talk to a few of my local theaters about getting this film to be shown and make it into an event. You know, maybe have some people sing the songs on stage before the movie begins and do a little like a montage melody or something like that. But make this into sort of an event. I don't know how, but I will try and contact a few places around here.
Well, I could see it as a midnight movie, and everybody's coming dressed as students or as zombies or as savage, and they carry they bring in candy canes, and they bring in bowling balls, and they start talking back to the screen, and they start singing along. I could see the big Hollywood ending, everybody singing along to that.
Yeah.
So I think you have a point when you say, it could be like Rocky Horror Picture Show and be a midnight movie.
If anybody is in Utah listening, there's a new theater that I'm so excited about in American Fork, and they're called Maven Cinemas, and they do exclusively vintage releases. And they have Anna and the Apocalypse playing this season at least once on the 19th, I think a couple times, but people should, I'm gonna hopefully be able to go, but people should check that out. It's a really special place. I'm very excited about it.
Oh, that is awesome, Rachel. That would be so cool to see on a big screen. I know right now it's streaming on Shudder. So people are listening and want to watch it. It's streaming on there right now. And I believe you can rent it on Prime for relatively cheap as well. So
I paid $2 something or $3.49 or something for it on Amazon.
Well, I'll tell you what, Vern, if you rent the theater at AMC and screen the film. You can do that. They have those. They have that ability. You could do that. You invite all of your friends to see it. I'll come to Minneapolis and watch it with you.
Well, okay. Well, I would probably I got some connections over at the Parkway Theater. There or possibly Riverview, or but just because the Parkway Theater has like a stage that you can actually go up on, and they show movies in 35 millimeter and whatnot. And it's very much a home community of film lovers there. So I would probably try to go for that theater just because the rental cost is going to be a little bit cheaper too. So
Maven Cinemas 19th and 20th December.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, that is awesome. I can't. I want to come to Ohio right now, but I can't. I'm sorry.
But can I also just give a shout out to this movie of having maybe the best movie poster of recent memory? They yes. have the zombie hands all reaching out, and all together it ends up as a Christmas tree. It's great.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That is epic.
Nobody tries with posters anymore, so it's really good.
Unless you go to Europe. They have great posters in Europe.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Well, I guess this was made in England, so.
Yeah, well.
Is it Australian? Is it British or Australian?
British. It's filmed in Scotland.
Yeah.
It's Scottish. Oh. Yeah. Damn, those Scots can do a great American accent.
Scotland's just part of England, I believe.
Yes.
Wow. Not like our.
So. I didn't quite know exactly where this took place, so that's great. They did a great job of that. And Ella Hunt, I'm hoping to see her in more things. I don't know if I've seen her in anything else, but she's just got a great, amazing singing voice.
Mm-hmm.
She's charismatic. I would expect her to be in more leads, or especially in more movies after this. Kind of like, you know, Noomi Rapace after she was in Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. We saw her and other movies pop up. I kind of hope the same thing for Ella Hunt, because she has such a strong presence that I want to see her in other movies, even if it's just like side roles. I'm like, where is she coming back to this? And let's get another Anna and the Apocalypse 2. All right. I'll say it. I'll watch them drive around and kill zombies.
Yeah, she hasn't been in anything since Never mind.
I think she has a TV series in Great Britain, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Oh, she was in Dickinson.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or Dickensian, I think it's, isn't it? Dickinson. You're right. Yeah. On Apple TV. So.
Okay.
But that ended in 2021. So.
It looks like she's on the stage too. She did plays, things like that. So,
I mean,
she was in Lady Chatterley's Lover. So I did see her in that, but I don't really remember her. That's a very good film, though. So, very good adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
No, I just said she still works. So, go ahead.
They should have the entire cast members go on tour with this and sing the songs from the movie. I don't know. But then again, most people, it's not that big of a movie right now, so maybe most people probably wouldn't go. But I would go watch like a live performance of the movie. Like, every time they go into a song, it's them on stage singing the song, and then it goes back to the movie, and they can incorporate some stuff from the movie into the stage show and play the movie back and forth. Yeah. Like, it plays the movie, and then goes a song, and then they're on stage singing the song, and then it goes back to the movie. So it clips the movie with them singing the live song. So like the audio is them singing on stage. Yeah.
Say, it'd be interesting to see if someone could find a way to adapt this to a stage musical.
It could be done.
Well, I think what Vern's talking about is an interesting idea. You know, they have those concerts where they present the film, but they have the music done by a live orchestra synced to the film. Yeah. And you could do the same kind of thing here, only instead of all of the musical score, you could have all of the dancing and singing sequences done on stage, and then everything else goes with the film. I kind of like that idea. It's an interesting concept. I don't know that you could pull it off financially, but it's...
That's true. But I'm thinking that Hollywood ending song, having all the cast members come into the audience
yeah.
to and doing the songs yeah. right there. Yeah. Oh, God, what just... what a my heart would just be filled with such joy right there, right before a zombie wants to, like, you know, cut it out and eat it. It would just be great.
Well, I think what you have to do is you have to find some place that will stage this and say, we're going to commit to a you know, like at least a month's worth of performances this way, and let and see if it catches on. And then you've got something that maybe could become a cult type activity. You couldn't stage this as a national tour. It would have to be something that you did on a small, at a small venue, and give it a chance to, you know, kind of catch on.
We need like a big venue, like a fathom. There needs to be like a fathom event for just the movie itself.
Well, yeah, the alternative is to do it like at the Hollywood Bowl for a special night, you know, to find those kind of outlets.
There is a niche of Broadway horror that that if they could kind of tap into it, there's actually an Evil Dead.
Yes, musical. I was just going to say, you know, because in Vegas they have Evil Dead the musical, and it plays like once a week on the weekend at midnight.
I'm told that they literally spray blood out into the
audience. Oh, yeah, I've seen the show. It's a blast.
Yeah.
It's a blast.
And there's literally, like, Heathers, and I mean, there's a bunch of horror themed Broadway musicals. So if they could kind of tap into that, I mean, obviously Rocky Horror, but that's not really like scary horror.
See, I would have a theater do a double feature of this and Repo the Generic Opera. Two different types of horror musicals, but put them both together. I'd probably do this one maybe first, or I'm not quite sure what order I put them in, but I think it would be just a hoot to have two very unique and different horror musicals.
So any of you with the financial means for putting this together, contact the Lamb, and we'll get you in touch with Vern and Rachel and Howard and I, and we'll be happy to be co-executive producers of your theatrical stage presentation of Anna and the Apocalypse. There goes our dream. Howard, do you have any exit questions or summary things that you wanted to talk about?
No, all I was going to say is, does anybody else have anything more to say before we start closing out?
I just think it would be worth just talking briefly of why Christmas and horror end up being combined so frequently.
Well, actually, you know, on my next Pop Art episode, we will be talking about that, because we're doing what are we doing? We're doing Dead End and Windchill. So,
because there's Gremlins and Black Christmas, and I mean, there's quite a few.
Well, I think a lot of it is a reaction to there are so many of those holiday films that have been kind of sweet and almost, you know, I don't want to say camp, but they're a little treacly, as they say, and people reacted to that at some point or other and started doing, you know, something that's subversive, and that became a thing that people kind of attached themselves to. And now I think a lot of people are happy to have, you know, the subversive as part of their regular programming, not just the occasional sort of thing, because it seems like every year or two we're getting these kinds of movies.
Exactly. And I think at Christmas time, you're supposed to be safe. You're around your friends, your family. You're in a warm house and everything, too. Everything's about love and togetherness. And you don't expect any horror element to happen. And I think that's kind of a nice little thing to put into a holiday movie, because, yeah, it's Christmas time. Everyone's safe. Everyone will get everything they want. And then, oh, bam, now there's a killer here. So, yeah.
Well, we all have a love-hate relationship with the holiday. So yes, we need some sort of outlet that reveals some of our deeper feelings about this. So it can be kind of cathartic to watch a Christmas movie like Anna and the Apocalypse that, you know, is not a traditional Christmas. This sort of explores maybe the horrors of the holidays that we pretend aren't there but are, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So it sounds like it. So take it away, Richard.
All right. Well, I thank everybody for joining the show. We didn't have a lot of people who had volunteered for Movie of the Month until we knew what the Movie of the Month was, and then it was easy to find people who wanted to talk about it. So that's a little bit frustrating. Those of you who are listening and are regular members of the LAM community, you know, roll the dice occasionally. There could be something fun in your future. We certainly had a good time with this one. We're going to take a short break to hear from a fellow LAM Podcasting Network show, and when we come back, we have a couple of games for you.
Cinema Recall is available everywhere you find great podcasts.
The hell was that?
It's our voice promo guy.
Follow them on Facebook and Instagram under Cinema Recall Podcast and on Twitter at Cinema_Recall.
Vern, can we afford to have a voiceover guy?
We can't afford not to. He used to be a voice guy for movie trailers, but now he just follows me around and gives me movie trailer narration.
That's really sad.
What? Nah, we're giving him purpose in life. He now has a reason to go on.
Check out past episodes at cinemarecall.net. Promise it's fun!
And we're back. It's time for us to get to our exit question for the week. We are going to play a game, too, but I like to finish off this section here with the exit question because it's tied into the movie that we looked at before. Rachel was making the comment right before the break about how she thought it was interesting that there are so many horror-themed Christmas movies out and about. And Christmas movies, of course, are one of those things that we talk about. This is the exit question of the week. How did I phrase it exactly? Can you guys remind me the exact phrasing of the question? Because I don't have it in front of me. Go ahead.
I do, Richard. Is there a Christmas-themed movie that you can't stand?
Right, there you go. Is there a Christmas-themed movie that you can't stand?
And yeah, we want to know what it is and what irritates you.
Yes, there you go. Thank you. I've been so busy this week, and we put this show together a little bit later in the process than usual, so I just got lost on it for a second. So, Vern, since you know the question and you know the follow-ups to it, let's start with you. What's a Christmas-themed movie that you can't stand, and what is it about it that irritates you?
You know, that's worth it, too. Not a lot of it irritates me. The only thing that irritates me, and I don't watch it that much, is the cliché Lifetime Hallmark movies about the overstressed woman who works too much, and she goes to her hometown and she meets her ex-boyfriend and they hate each other, and then they start to like each other, and then oh no, her asshole fiance comes into town, and that's set around Christmas time. Yeah. That type of cliche.
Your objection to that is primarily the cliche storytelling.
The cliche, the overstressed woman, comes to town and works too much. But she meets this, like, down-home guy that, you know, has a small little coffee shop. And then she falls for them. And that. But that's probably nothing to do with Christmas right there. I hate the theme sometimes of them playing movies over and over again, like the whole Christmas Story thing. In fact, I started to hate Christmas Story just because it would play on TV all the damn time. And I was like, I mean, maybe if they put in Bob Clark's Black Christmas and A Christmas Story back-to-back, I would enjoy that more. But no, it just has to be A Christmas Story all the time. So, yeah, that's it. That's my rant, where the stations play the same movie over and over again.
That's okay. That works. You know, it's a tangential one.
Yes, fair enough. Richard, do you think of one, or does
I'm working Rachel on it. I've got one that I'm thinking of, but I want to think. I got to reconsider some other things. Howard, how about you? Have you got one that you can't stand, or do they all fit in that category for you?
Yeah, I was trying to think of them that I can't stand, and I don't think there is any really that I can't stand. There are some that, you know, I just won't watch again because I don't think they worked or anything. The things that came to mind is I was never able to get through either the George C. Scott or the Albert Finney Christmas Carol. I turned them off really quick.
And I'm going, how hard? Girls? What? Really? You didn't like those?
I mean, it made sense, because there's only one good Christmas Carol story, and that's the Muppets Christmas Carol. So I get that.
I haven't seen the Muppets, but no, it's the Albert Finney and the George C. Scott versions
that's crazy.
I just turned off.
Well, the George C. Scott one I remember being quite good. I haven't seen it in 20 years.
Yeah, I like it.
But I suppose the one that, even though it does have some good aspects, is The Holiday.
People
exchange houses and
the only
convincing romantic relationship is between, I think, Kate Winslet and Eli Wallach, and there is no romantic relationship to it. They're just friends. I think Jude Law is very good, but the movie is just no.
Okay. I don't remember that one too much there. Okay. Rachel, do you have a one?
Yeah, I've got a couple.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of the Rankin Bass. I love animation. I love Christmas, but they have like a certain degree of sort of planned quirkiness that just comes off as just kind of annoying to me.
Let's be a dentist. What's, you know, bad about that?
My favorite is The Year Without Santa Claus, if we're going Rankin Bass, but I don't love those. There's also, I have a whole podcast about Hallmark Christmas movies, so obviously I enjoy a lot of those, but there's obviously a lot of bad ones as well. But in particular, there's a series called the Finding Father movies, and it's Finding Father Christmas, Engaging Father Christmas, and Marrying Father Christmas, and they are so bad. I hate the plots. I hate the story. So those are terrible. I am not a fan of the Family Stone. I don't despise it, but the Family Shenanigans brand of holiday film is probably my least favorite. Just kind of stresses me out, and it's not fun. Usually for me, there's a couple that I like, but this one, it just, especially the ending where they're swapping partners, it just all feels so phony to me, and I don't care for it.
Is a Christmas sweeters party?
No.
Is that Christmas? People swapping partners. It's like a.
Oh no no no! But the two brothers, they end up anyway. You have to see it.
It's like, okay. A lot of geeky stuff going on in these Christmas movies that I did not realize. Wow.
It's not geeky. It's just a romantic. Yeah.
Well, whatever you want to call it, that's fine.
It's funny you mentioned it because, you know, The Family Stone is one of those films that I see people of a later generation seem to really like it. And I saw it the one time and I thought, that was such a waste of 2 hours. I hadn't thought about it in the last 20 years.
It's very popular. People love it. But I guess if you have that kind of like pretentious liberal family, maybe it does speak to you. I don't know. But to me, it just feels like I hate all these people. They're judgmental. They're annoying. they're really not. So it's not for me. Also, the Black Christmas remake 2019 is one of the worst movies I think I've ever seen. It was so, so heavy-handed and not scary in the slightest. And just terrible. So that would be one I despise. It was really bad.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, I did remember the one that I was originally thinking of, and I'm going to stick with that. And it was a big success. It was financially profitable, and I don't think it's beloved by anybody, despite the fact that it was so successful. And that's the live action How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey, a movie that is
I'm with you there.
It's all about production design and nothing about the story. I think you get everything that you need in the story in that 22-minute TV special. And that's about as much as you need. Everything else is just superfluous. It feels padded. It looks great. I like the look of the movie. I thought that they did a reasonable representation of the Grinch and Whoville and all of the things that are going on. But it was just, oh my gosh, you know, why isn't this just 30 minutes and let's be done with it? I guess you can't make a 30-minute movie and expect people to come and pay for it.
It's funny too, Richard, because my niece loves the movie and my co-host Ashley, she loves the movie as well. So different strokes for different folks, but I agree with everything you say. Everything is just amped too much. I think Jim Carrey just overdoes the Grinch too much there. It becomes too cartoony. He's not medicine. So I did not believe the transition when the Grinch does become good. It's just too over the top.
We've got all of our complaints about Christmas movies out for the moment. Let's do a game. We've got two quick games. Hopefully they're quick. I know the one that I created is quick. Do you want to start, Howard, or do you want me to start?
No, I'll go ahead and start.
All right.
So, yours is probably quicker than mine, so we'll go with your second.
Okay.
Mine is called Tag Your It Zombie Movie Style. And what it is I'll give you the year a movie was made, and I'm going to give you the tagline, which is basically what they put on the poster to advertise it. So call out your name when you think you have it. If nobody's getting it, I may add some things to it before.
All right. Our name's our buzzer.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody ready?
I'm ready.
Yes.
Okay. 1943. Who said the dead don't walk?
Richard.
Vern.
Oh. I'm not sure who came in first. I thought Richard, did you come in first?
I thought I came in first, but,
I thought I heard first just a little before.
And I'm going to go with the obvious answer. I walked with the zombie.
Yes.
Good job.
Woo! 2005. The dead shall inherit the earth.
No, it's not. Well, fuck it, Vern.
Is it World
Vern?
I'll say Land of the Dead.
Yes.
Yeah?
All right.
That's which?
You got
2004.
It.
2004. Yeah, 2004. It's just one of those days when you're feeling a little dead.
Vern? Shaun of the Dead.
Yes. Oh, by the way, I didn't say first to 10 or whoever is ahead wins. 2016. Get on board to stay alive.
Richard. Is that Train to Busan?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
2007. One witness, one camera.
Vern. Wreck?
Yes. 1968. They're coming to get you.
Vern.
Richard.
Again. Again?
Vern got in there first.
Night of the Living Dead.
Yes. So Vern's at 4, Richard's at 2.
Rachel's not interested.
I don't know my zombie movies at all.
1992. There's something nasty in Lionel's cellar. His family.
Ooh. Vern?
Vern?
I'm getting a wild guess. You're head of the family?
No.
Okay.
That sounds like a great guess, though, but no.
Okay.
I may just have to tell you this one. It's Dead Alive.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Oh,
damn.
Oh, good. Obvious. Duh.
1998. This time, the monsters are real. 1998. It's animated.
Wow. 1998.
Can't think of this one.
It's based on a cult show. It's a big dog. Okay, time's up.
I should know this one.
Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island.
Oh,
come on, guys. I was spoon-feeding you that
one.
Yeah,
you were. You were.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry. Animated big dog.
I thought about Cujo. And then I thought about Clifford. I'm like, I don't remember zombies being Clifford.
Clifford, the big red zombie.
I was thinking, is this some anime that I'm forgetting?
Yeah,
no, right. 2009. Our Land is Their Land. Woody Harrelson.
Richard.
Oh, Zombieland.
Vern.
Sorry.
Zombieland.
Darn it. Forgot. That's
right. Zombieland.
Zombieland, yeah.
1985. They're back from the grave. Vern.
Return of the Living Dead.
Yes. They're back from the grave and they're ready to party.
Yes.
2002. The Days Are Numbered.
Oh, Vern.
Vern.
28 Days Later?
Yes. So Vern has 7, Richard has 2.
Yeah, I'm not going to stage a comeback at this point. How many more do you have, Howard?
A lot, but, you know, Vern's on 7, so it shouldn't take too long.
Let me see if I can keep him from getting to 10.
Yeah. 2013. Cold Body, Warm Heart.
Rachel.
Richard.
Oh.
Rachel.
Warm Bodies.
There you go.
Yes.
Hey.
All off the bat. 1978. I'm terrified at the race for this one. When
Richard.
There's no more
Vern. Room, Richard.
Who went first?
I think I did this time.
Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
That's Dawn of the Dead.
Yes. Yes, when there's no more
room in hell.
Room on earth, hell of the dead shall walk the earth. 1984. They came, they shot, they
Vern.
Saved the world.
Vern. Nate of the Comet.
Yes.
Yes. 2007. It's turned to week. The Horror Returns.
Can you say that again? You broke up.
Yeah. When days turn to weeks.
Richard.
The Horror Returns. Vern.
28 Weeks Later.
Yes.
That was going to be my guess, too, yes.
Vern's at 9. 2019. Harrelson, Eisenberg, Breslin, and
Richard.
Stone. Richard.
Zombieland 2.
I'll give it to you, but...
Oh, is there there's a subtitle, right?
Yeah. Double Tap.
Double Tap, yes, that's right.
So I think you have 5, unless I've miscounted. 2021. Always Bet on the Dead.
Oh, no, I don't know this one.
Well, bet is a key word.
Oh, I know Vern.
Vern.
Casino of the Dead. I don't know.
No.
Oh, what's that movie?
Las Vegas.
It's a heist movie. What's it called?
It's
Dave
Zack
Bautista
Snyder,
is in it.
Yeah, it's Zack Snyder, but I can't think of what it's called.
Oh, yeah. Damn it, you're right.
I never can remember either. It's Army of the Dead.
Army of the
Dead. Oh, shit. Because Casino Zombie sounds better.
I don't think anybody's going to get this. I just love this. 1932. They knew this fiend was practicing zombieism on the natives, but when he tried it on a white girl, the nation revolted.
Richard.
Richard.
I'm going to go with White Zombie.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
1994, Zombie Graveyard.
1984, the Zombie Graveyard.
It's kind of an Italian guy, even though it's in English. Rupert Everett.
I'll tell you about Desert. House by the Cemetery?
No, that's a good guess, but that's a different one.
Okay.
It's Cemetery Man.
Oh, no, okay. Never saw it.
He plays, he's the head of the graveyard, and he has to kill the living. When someone's buried, he knows they're going to come out of the grave at night, so he has to be there to kill them. That's the basic premise.
Gotcha.
2009. Ein, zwei, die.
Richard.
Oh.
Richard.
Oh, what's the... It's, Dead Snow.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my
job.
Gosh.
Good Richard's job. At 7.
Oh, damn. Ooh.
Burnt at 9.
Oh, man. Richard,
maybe I was wrong. Maybe I will stage a comeback.
Is he good? Yeah.
1964. What can she want? Who can satisfy her? Soothe that half-mad sob, that lustful giggle, that tortured scream of pain. The dead know, and so does he, for he is dot, dot, dot.
Damn.
Bird. I'll do what I just heard, The Illustrated Man.
No, that's not a bad guess. It's in English, but I think it was an Italian film, Italian Gaio film. Famous American horror actor is in it.
What, Vincent Price?
Yes.
Oh.
For he is...
Well, I know he's not Dr. Fibes. That's later.
okay, it's The Last Man on Earth.
Oh, The Last Man on Earth. I got you.
Okay.
Yeah. I Am Legend. Omega Man.
Yeah. No, let's go with this one. 2011. 50 years after the Cuban Revolution, a new revolution is about to begin.
Burn. World War Z?
No, sorry. Okay.
Che Guevara rises from the
Hispanic.
Dead. I don't know.
Oh, you're probably close. It is Juan of the Dead.
Oh,
geez. Juan of the Dead.
Wow.
2013. I can't leave my family.
Vern. I'm going to say this right there, World War Z.
That is World War Z.
There you go. Victory for Vern.
Yay. There
you go.
Yay. I knew I'd come there sooner or later. Every answer, World War Z.
I'll tell you what, that game was quite consuming. We don't need the second game. This is fine.
Come on. That's 2 years.
I'm happy to do mine. It's not nearly as interesting. It was last minute, but I'll do it. I'm going to give you clues as we go along. I've got five. How many do I have? 8 or 9 horror-adjacent Christmas movies. I'm going to give you clues, and if you get it on the first clue, you get a full 4 points. If you get it on the second clue, you get 3 points. If you get it on the third clue, you get 2 points. If you get it on the last clue, you only get 1 point. And the clues will go in order. Very simple. I'm going to give you the year that the movie came out. The second clue is the director. The third clue are the stars. And the fourth clue is the plot.
All right. Okay. So we buzz in our names as soon as we know it.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So.
How many times can we guess?
You can guess once until everybody else has guessed. And then if everybody else has guessed, then you can come back in.
Okay.
All right. 2016. Nobody. Second clue. The director is Chris Peckover.
No.
Third clue. The stars are Lee Miller and Olivia De Jong.
Oh.
No, nothing comes to mind.
2016.
And the fourth clue is the plot. Ashley travels to the suburban home of the Lerners to babysit their 12-year-old son Luke at Christmas time. She must soon defend herself and the young boy when unwelcome intruders announce their arrival. This was talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay. I'm busy. Vern.
Vern.
Better Watch Out.
There you go. You get 1 point, Vern.
Oh.
Hey.
Sweet.
I didn't think that was so old. I thought
I
that was more
hated
recent.
Hated that movie.
2016?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, for God. Huh. God, I hate that movie.
I thought that was more recent. Hmm. Interesting.
Next, 1974. The director, Bob Clark.
Vern.
Rachel.
Vern.
Black Christmas.
Black Christmas. All right, Vern gets three there. I can spell Vern. Sorry.
Anyway, we'll spell it's fine.
2015. The director is Michael Dougherty. The stars are Adam Scott and Toni Collette.
I read Rachel.
Rachel.
Oh. Krampus.
Yeah.
There you go.
Nice job.
2 points for Rachel. All right. The year is 1984.
Rachel.
Rachel.
Oh, damn. Just
guess Gremlins.
No, that's a good guess, though. That's 1984, okay. But that's not it.
Yeah, good job.
The director is Charles E. Seller, Jr. The stars are Lillian Chauvin, Gilmer McCormick, and Robert Brian Wilson.
Vern.
Vern.
This is a wild guess here. Soul Survivor.
That is not it.
Okay.
So... And the plot, after seeing his parents murdered in front of him as a young boy, he spends most of his life in an orphanage where he's abused by the mother superior. His turmoil leads him to become a Santa serial killer.
I should know it, but no, I don't.
Very controversial book in 1984. Vern?
Can I come in there? Silent Night, Deadly Night?
Yes. Vern gets a point. There we go. 1997. The director is Michael Coonley. The stars are Scott McDonald and Christopher Allport.
Oops, no idea.
And I'll tell you what. I'm going to switch the clue on the last one. The star is not Michael Keaton.
Oh, Vern.
Vern.
Jack Frost?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The plot line is, after an accident that left a murderer dead in genetic material, the vengeful killer returns as a murderous snowman to exact revenge on the man who sent him to be executed. But I like the Michael Keaton clue better. Because somebody out there has probably made that mistake, you know. Let me get that Michael Keaton Jack Frost film for the kids. And then ended up with this.
But that's still a horror movie. I mean.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I've heard. All right. 2010. The director is Jalmari Helander. The stars are Tommy Korpela, Omni Tamalia, and Jorma Tamalia. And by the
Vern.
Way, Jorma Tamalia stars in one of the films that's going to be on my top 10 list this year. Go ahead, Vern.
Vern, The Orphanage?
Nope.
Okay.
And the plot. In the depths of the Coventry Mountains, 486 meters deep lies the closest guarded secret of Christmas. The time has come to dig it up. This Christmas,
okay.
Everyone will believe in Santa Claus.
I know this is now.
All right. Well, a second bite at the apple. Oh, wait. Howard, did you? I thought
is it Rare Exports?
It is.
Yep. Jesse Dunn.
Howard gets a point there at the end. All right. And then 2022. The director is Tommy Wirkola. The stars are David Harbour and John Leguizamo.
Oh. Rachel.
Rachel.
Violent Night.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And that's all I had. So Vern wins, but Rachel scored a couple of times, and Howard finally got in under the wire. That was it, folks, you know.
The one that nobody else knew, I got.
Well, let's give everybody a chance to summarize here and promote something that they are interested in having us listen to, read, watch, whatever you've got. Vern, what have you got to promote this week?
All right. Well, over at Cinema Recall, Ashley and I are reviewing Christmas classics in under 30 minutes. So we did an episode on Klaus and Anna and the Apocalypse, which we just talked about here on this episode. Our most recent episode, we covered Bob Clark's Black Christmas and Ted Demme's The Ref. And I believe next week we are going to be covering Last Christmas and Kiss Kiss Bane Bane. So check us out each week. We're covering different Christmas stuff. And then after, I believe, December, we're going on a small little hiatus of sorts, and we'll be back to do bonus episodes here and there, but we're going to go on hiatus until the spring.
All right. Rachel, what have you got that you want people to see, hear, look at?
Yeah, got lots of fun stuff happening at Hallmarkies Podcast. We did do an episode this season on holiday horror where I had my friend Lee from Drum Dums and Sean Chandler on, and we talked about It's a Wonderful Knife that came out this year. And it's not only for Hallmark fans. We have a weekly ranking series where we every Monday. And we've just done our ranking our favorite classic Christmas movies and then modern Christmas movies. So pretty much just anything holiday and rom-com related you can find at Hallmarkies Podcast. And I'm really proud of it. I think it's a fun listen. So check it out.
Nice. Howard, what's up at Pop Art?
At Pop Art, well, I'm behind, so it's basically the same as last time. The most recent one that is up is with Sean Homrig, where we talk The Ice Storm and Peyton Place to soap opera movies. The one I'm working on editing now is Jennifer Van Sile, where we talk Parasite and Les Cérémonies about about servants and that become deadly. And then after this, we had Richard was very kind to skip, and he's going to do my February or my Valentine's Day episode because I got sick and couldn't record. So next one will be the Christmas episode with Jay Clewitt, who always does my Christmas. And we're doing two horror films about people driving somewhere for the holidays, Wind Chill and Dead End.
Very good. And I'm looking forward to that. Is there any chance that those will actually be up before Christmas?
Well, they're recording December 10th, so theoretically.
I'll keep our fingers crossed. Keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah.
All right. On my site, I'd like to encourage people to visit the Lambcast YouTube channel and know that when we do this podcast, you can, of course, always listen to the podcast. But if you want to watch the podcast simultaneously, you go to YouTube, search for Lambcast, and you will find the Lambcast videos that accompany this podcast. And mostly you're just going to find interesting things to look at while you're listening to us talk. And it won't just be our talking heads. On my own site, I have reviews up of Dream Scenario, the new Silent Night, the revenge movie from John Woo, a revisit with Arthur Christmas, one of the best Christmas movies of the last 20 years, and I also have a review up of Napoleon. And in the next couple of days, I'm going to be overloaded with Christmas movies that I'm revisiting in theaters. White Christmas, Love Actually, Die Hard, Muppet Christmas Carol. I'm going to see all of them on the big screen. And as always, on my site, If I saw it in a theater, you'll read about it there. So make sure you come by and visit. I want to thank all of my guests for joining us this week. I know for some of you it was last minute, but it was great to talk about Anne and the Apocalypse. Howard, I appreciate the game and your hosting for us. And I hope everybody has a ho-ho-ho great holiday this year. Just don't open the door for people pretending to be Santa Claus who have axes in their hands, okay? Because we want you all back.
Maybe they know how to chop wood. I mean, I don't know how to chop wood in fireplaces. I need the
Krampus is coming to visit Vern.
Yes, it's true.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to the Lambcast. If you have an idea for a show or would like to join us on the Lambcast, contact us at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Find us on Facebook, just search for Lambcast, or on Twitter, at Lambcast. The Lamb site can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com, and please head over to iTunes to leave us a review.
Go to hell.
Be careful, it could go off for like no reason.